welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, coming live from Braden's in Florida, it's Matt Penny, where he's on the road doing fucking grassroots basketball shit. Yeah. That's what he does. Mm-hmm. Penny, what's going on, man? What up, Ben?
I'm living out of a suitcase, really like a country music song, I feel like. Just changed my clothes, doing some laundry on the road. I went home for about 16 hours from Pangos in Vegas, and now I'm down at IMG Academy for a Future 60 Under Armour camp tomorrow. Top 32 boys and girls from the UA circuit, and still podcasting, still following along here on the Twitter machine and on the podcast machine with you, which is great.
Anything you want to point out from Pangos? Pangos is weirdly one of the few events that like I miss most from not living in the United States, because like I can't swing coming over there for just Pangos, right? Like, it's just not economically feasible, as much as I love the event. But it is weirdly like a great opportunity to see a lot of really, really great young players all in one place.
It's a catch-all across brands. And that's why I love it. Yeah. That's why I've gone the last few years, because I see so much of the Under Armour guys. And then during the high school season, I'll see the elite high schools, elite prep schools. But you don't see as many guys in one place. And that's why you pull the Nike guys in, the Adidas, the Independent, our Under Armour guys, and actually line up against each other. And yes, there's times and many times where it devolves into just up and down. It's a dunk show. And I have my laptop out. I'm taking notes. And after 20 minutes, I just close it. Like, I'm just going to watch some basketball and not read too far into this one right now. But the beautiful thing is, the games don't start till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, day two. So if you want to go Vegas it up, go ahead. I was recording draft videos with you in my hotel room. That's probably says more about me than Vegas. But there is something for everybody, and it's such a wide swath of guys that I was able to get eyes on and not watch mixtapes and videos, despite it becoming a mixtape and video too.
Yeah, I mean, like, literally, there will be times where, like, you know, midway through practice, they will stop and like do a dunk contest, like right at the end of the first session, right?
Well, there was one game where Elliot Cadeau from New York, he dunked on a player, I won't say, toward the end of the game. There was like 8 seconds left, and it was like so much of a statement that everyone just looked at each other like, yeah, we're good, we're done. They just like stopped. The cameraman came on the court. They like showed the video to each other, like watching it. I'm like, this is it. This is summer basketball at its finest.
I remember one time Gottlieb was coaching one of the teams, and I think Anthony Edwards dunked so hard on Johnny Juzang, like one of the most impressive dunks I've ever seen in my life. And Doug was coaching one of the two teams. I can't remember which one of the two he was coaching. And he just looks over and his face is like, as for the people listening on the podcast, it was like, oh boy, like this was backing up,
like snatch from him via basketball.
Yeah, like literally, like he just saw a ghost like walk on the court. It was just like, oh no, what just happened?
You know what? Now that I'm processing. I wasn't at that event, but I remember those Anthony dunks too. And that's when he first like kind of made his like actual national statement thing of like, ooh, this could like really be a thing. Anthony Edwards might be like really, really good.
Yeah, when I saw Ant that day, I was just like, oh, this is definitely a top five pick. Like this looks different.
Yeah, he stands out among the dunk contest. He still stands out as an elite and a supreme dunker. But what also I thought was cool, kind of not subplot, but a lot of times these camps, it becomes guard shows. It's just guards pulling a jacket. They had really good bigs, like really, really good bigs. Bayfall from Colorado was awesome. Xavier Booker, who was a Cathedral High School in Indiana, he's like a top five guy now. Duke just offered, Auburn just offered, lefty shooter. The first time I saw him, and they played night one, back and forth, and I'm on court one watching. I'm like, this is perfect.
But that's not what we're talking about today. We're not talking Pangos as much as we love Pangos.
Yes.
But we are going to talk NBA draft fits. We're going to talk 2022 fits among the best prospects in this class.
Yeah.
Our idea here is we're going to go deep into the players in the top 10, 12, 14, something like that. And whatever their reasonable draft range is, So for Jabari Smith, Jabari Smith's reasonable draft range is somewhere between 1 through 3. Yeah. We're going to discuss the best fit for Jabari Smith among the teams 1 through 3 in this class. The way that I didn't really explain to Matt what I was thinking in terms of what I meant by fit. So we might have different ideas here, but I'm kind of combining the two ideas of best team fit and best fit for the player. So what I mean by that is best fit for the player to get the most out of his skill set, because maybe there are some ancillary pieces that really make sense and could be valuable for him to play with. Or on top of that, I also mean the team needs this guy to be able to come in and play. Sometimes that will also mean coaching development. So obviously with the Pelicans, right? The Pelicans have an incredible track record of being able to teach guys to shoot and being able to just draft these versatile guys and make it work, right? So we're considering a few different factors here when we discuss the idea of fit. Matt, how did you go about this idea? Did you put this much thought into it as I did?
I put a lot of thought into it. Our paths are a little different. I did take those factors into consideration. I didn't make the range too crazy, but as soon as you said Jabari Smith's range, I'm like, oh, this is 1 or 2. I was a little bit further out, not too wild, but for the most part, I think we're aligned with our way of thinking here.
Yeah, and like someone like Dyson Daniels, where the range gets a little bit wider. Like for me, the range was something like 6 to 12, right?
Yeah.
So like I even tried to like expand it a little bit more. Like I'd be a little bit surprised if Dyson went 6. I'd be a little bit surprised if he fell to 12, but I wanted to be a little bit more inclusive of the whole thing as we were going through and doing this. So Penny, I mean, do you have anything else you want to say here?
I have one more thing I want to say. I did have some duplicates because I do think there's a few teams you can spin it. It's like the same answer. I would like to do this for the whatever 10, 12 guys at the end. I have a running tally here for the teams that we didn't select. I think we should go back and say, hey, we missed Washington. Who's the guy actually for Washington? Just so it's all representative. We don't have people yelling at us like, why do you have 4 people in the Rockets? That is not how math works. There's a lottery. You have one pick. So don't yell. I promise we'll get there.
Yeah. Okay. Let's start with Jabari Smith, who is currently the favorite via sports books. I mean, drastically the favorite. I think he's going off at minus 200 to be the number 1 overall pick. I'll be honest, I don't see a lot of value at him at minus 200 to go number 1. But I'll have a mock draft next week and I'll explain intel on that front. The goal with this is not to release intel. The goal is to talk about his fit. So Jabari Smith, who is the best fit among his reasonable draft range?
I actually think it's the Orlando Magic.
I do too.
Good. We're starting off strong because Orlando shot 33% from 3 last year, which was 28th out of 30th. They have all the guards. They do, right? You just extended Wendell Carter. For Jabari Smith Jr. to come in, just make shots. They have creators. We've talked about that's the one thing he can't really do. He can't take it off the bounds. He can defend. He can shoot. He can't create his own. They have enough creators. Just go in there and shoot. They're desperate for like that type of role and that type of player. That's why it fits so seamlessly. I know it's a cop-out. Probably people are like, yeah, he's first. We just said he's minus 200, and that's the pick. I would still go Chet because that's a swing I would take. But in purely team fit and structure and dynamics, Jabari Smith, the Magic, makes the most sense. I have a spin of that after rebuttal, but the Magic is my first pick.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to rebut that. I actually agree with you. So the reason that I agree with you more than anything is I really like the front court mix of Franz Wagner, Jabari Smith, and Wendell Carter. I know that they still have Jonathan Isaac in that mix as well. They still have Chuma Okeke as well. But I think particularly that first trio, their skill set meshes really well together. Wendell is a really tough physical rebounder. He could use someone who can rotate over from the weak side. He could use someone who's a little bit more mobile at the 4. Franz Wagner can play the 3 and the 4. He's a really sharp, smart defender. And on top of it, he can run some secondary ball screens in a way that, you know, Jabari might be able to really help and utilize. Like it might really help Jabari to have someone like that early in his career while he develops that ability to be able to take guys off the bounce. I really like that fit a lot.
Yeah.
I think that on top of it, you look at the guards that Orlando does have, I think they're actually pretty okay as distributors. Like Markelle Fultz is a pretty good distributor now. You know, Jalen Suggs is a good distributor. I actually really liked his passing and playmaking this year, even if the shooting was a calamity. And then Cole Anthony can make plays in ball screens as well that he's shown. He's definitely a bit more of a scorer, but I really like the idea of putting Jabari there and letting him develop both for the player and for the team, because I think the team, they really need a scorer. Like they need the guy that can go get a bucket at any point. And I do think that by the time Jabari is 23 years old, that is going to be him. Like he's going to be able to just get to his spots. He's going to be strong enough. He's going to have the high release point. He's already an elite shooter. I think he's the guy that kind of meshes everything together that fits best for the Orlando Magic at number one.
Beautifully said. I want to spin it on its head for 1 second. And I know the new thing is people hate trades and like mock drafts. Like don't do a trade. Don't live in a fantasy world. Just take the guy of who it is. So bear with me for a minute. The Pistons have a ton of cap space, right?
They do.
So hypothetically, say the Pistons signed DeAndre Ayton to a max deal. If they rolled out a lineup with DeAndre Ayton, had Jabari Smith, you have Sadiq Bey, you sign in a versatile shooter and Cade Cunningham, that's not a bad core. That's a good thing to roll out there where Cade Cunningham has more options as shooters. You had the versatility of Sadiq Bey can still shoot, but he's kind of more of like a mid-post guy now. You get a free agent. DeAndre takes the physicality, the rebounding, the rim running, the shot blocking, and Jabari can just play his game. I know this is like three things that'll never happen, but that was like the pick where they're 29th in the league in three-point percentage at 32.6. Run those pick and rolls all day. You have somebody behind you. So that's a dream world. That's a fantasy. And in short, yeah, it's the Magic, but the Pistons would be fun too.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be great, but I just don't know how he gets to the Pistons.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, or like how they even move up. Like, I don't think
you'd have to give one of those pieces, but that's why my list was a little bit more liberal than yours of, hey, what about the top five here?
Yeah. Okay. The number two prospect that we're going to talk about is Chet Holmgren. Mm. And Matt Penny knows Chet's game better than anyone, probably in the public sphere. You've seen Chet more than anyone in the public sphere for sure. What do you think is the best fit for him moving forward?
I think it's Oklahoma City Thunder, who have the second pick in the draft.
Okay, why?
The developmental timeline is the first thing, because you go there and it's patience and it's repetition over the immediacy of production. You're not being picked into that place and into that culture and being like, hey, man, you need to average 17-8 or this is viewed as a bust. They don't see it that way. Right. You can't really say trust the process anymore, because I think Philadelphia fans get mad or think it worked, didn't work. I don't know if we think it worked anymore. Philadelphia is always yelling regardless. But for Oklahoma City, they can be committed to both his process and theirs. There's not like it has to be a win right now. You're probably 2 years away from that. But I like the idea offensively of him taking off the rim, pushing ahead with Shea, pushing ahead with Giddey. You have some perimeter toughness with Lu Dort. And Sam Presti is going to take risks on guys like this. I've joked to some other scouts and media people that he might just take somebody that we haven't even like thought of. Like Keegan Murray's going to go second. Jaden Ivey's going to second, maybe. But for Chet, that's the best place of like the slow burn of let's heat it up a little bit and not throw him into the mix right away and have this expectation that he has to dominate from day one.
Yeah, I think that my pick would be Oklahoma City purely because the timeline matches up, right? Like, I think that they're going to be patient enough to let Chet develop his frame at his own pace to where it makes sense. I think they would get the best out of Chet. In terms of like team needs and like what an organization could use, I think Houston like could really use Chet. They need a tough motherfucker who is a competitive dude who will step in and give them all sorts of like real defensive upside with that core. Alperen Şengün, not a good defender in the front court, but actually kind of meshes well. I think that Chet would really unlock Şengün in a big way because of his ability to space the floor. They could play five out while playing 6'10 and 7 foot across the front court on offense. And then defensively, Chet would just cover up a lot of the holes that Şengün brings you. Jalen Green, obviously not like some terrific defender. Kevin Porter improved defensively this year, but I think having a spacing five that could play lineups with Kevin Porter, it has been shown to really help him, I think, substantially in the way that he can attack the rim. Because obviously they have Christian Wood already, who's a threat to be able to space the floor. So in terms of like the team that could use Chet the most, I do think it's Houston. But I worry that Houston could potentially, just with Tillman Fertitta and that ownership group, try to speed up the timeline a little bit in a way that concerns me when it comes to developing Chet's frame long term. I do think Chet is just so competitive that he's going to be able to play from day one and be okay. But I don't know if he's going to be at his best. And I worry that that would the desire to speed up the timeline would be a little bit concerning to me. In that vein, I do think that Oklahoma City, who also needs a center, also needs a defensive centerpiece next to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Josh Giddey, I think that their willingness to take this a little bit more slowly, develop it a little bit more patiently, probably makes it a little bit better of a fit for Chet as the player. And then they also have a real need for him. And he fits the scheme they want to play. They want to play five out. They want to be able to shoot, space the floor from the five position, as we've seen with guys like Isaiah Roby sliding down to the five. I think Chet is probably the best fit for Oklahoma City. And I think Oklahoma City is the best fit for Chet Holmgren.
It seems like a town and a fan base that would embrace him too, because he had like the halfway thing with Poku, and see how it works out. And I don't know if you saw the clip that made its rounds when a reporter asked Chet, who's the best player in the NBA? And he paused for a second. And he goes, me in 2 months. And just like deadpan. And that's one, his personality, but two, he believes it, not even from like a cocky perspective. Like, he doesn't know that he's 195 pounds, but he's going to work on his body. I know. Now all the frame stuff is like popping up for like the fifth time, like heavily, like the wave is back. Like, I don't know, the frame, like we've discussed this ad nauseum. You believe it or you don't. I believe he's going to fill out. I believe that he's going to be a really good pro. I take him one, I like with Oklahoma City. So if he goes two, he goes three. We just outlined two really good landing points for him too.
Yeah. I keep going back and forth again on him and Jabari.
Oh God, I can't.
It's going to be one of the two for me at number one. I'm not sure which one, but I think they're both so good at this. I think that they're both such interesting players in such divergent ways with their games, because Jabari, I think, has a chance to be a really high level scorer, like a legit 25 point per game scorer if it all breaks right. I think Chet's value is a little bit more more on the margins.
Yeah, like it's swing, right? It's like these are the ones we try to go for. It is like, how safe do you want to play it? Like Oklahoma City first, I think they still would probably go Chet. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Chet was fifth. What do I know anymore?
Who knows, right?
And this is just me because I'm messed up. I'm on the plane. And I'm just like, maybe I'm this all wrong. Maybe the top five is just like the tankathon button. I just got to like jumble it up. If you told me Jaden Ives is the best in this class in 5 years, I'd say maybe. You told me Chet, Jabari, and now an easy segue, the guy we're about to talk about, I'm like having second thoughts about Paolo Banchero. Have I just been like too critical this whole time? This guy's like plop in right now, day one, he's going to get you 18 points a game. Why are we overthinking this? That's possible too.
Yeah. And like with Jabari as well, or with Chet, I'm sorry. A thing that I really truly keep thinking about with Chet is this idea that the best players in the NBA, they very rarely have comparables, right? Yeah. Like, you very rarely can point to someone, even back when they were prospects, right? And you go, oh, that's who they were like, right? LeBron is different. Like, you can go LeBron, like, there's some Magic Johnson there. But someone like Giannis Antetokounmpo, like, he doesn't really have a precedent, right? Rudy Gobert didn't really have a precedent on the defensive end, right? Just in terms of the length and everything. I'm trying to think of like some other examples off the top of my head. Like Joel Embiid, I guess sort of had Hakeem Olajuwon, but like Joel is just way bigger and like has more of a perimeter game than Hakeem. It's just like kind of a different game now than when Hakeem played and was on the block and dream shaking guys and everything like that. A lot of the best players in the league, I mean, Nikola Jokic is probably the prime example of this, by the way. I guess you could maybe say Arvydas Sabonis, but like Jokic is better than Arvydas Sabonis was, having watched a good amount of Sabonis tape, as good as Arvydas was, and he's a genuine Hall of Famer. It's just hard oftentimes to point to the players that are like other players with today's NBA. And I think that front offices, they get worried about what a player can and can't be. Because if you can't visualize it, because there's not a precedent for it, it's hard to be creative. It's harder to be creative than it is to fit something into a tight box, right? And with Chet, you can't fit him into a tight box. So
It's building a house without a blueprint, but you got great builders, like the best, get the best supplies, but you don't know what it is. Like you have blueprints for some of these other guys, but you can't put Chet in a box. See, people say, oh, he's just Porzingis. No, he's not. Like kind of the frame kind of looks like that, but like that's not who he is. So who is he? Oh, he's Poku. No, he's not Poku. Like that's not who he would be. You could not easily, but it's easier to kind of label the Jabaris and the Paulos and Jaden Ivey's a little bit. And those guys are really good prospects. I'm not saying just because they're easily labeled, they're not like at that level. But yeah, it's like keep Austin weird, keep Chet weird, keep prospects weird. That's like the good thing about it. You got to have some stones to take them though. You do. Because if his body breaks down 3 years, I don't think we're going to say, wow, surprised by that. Did not anticipate that. There'd be a lot of people on Twitter comments saying like, we told you the body wasn't there.
Totally.
I think it will.
Okay, let's go to Paolo. Paolo Banchero, where is his best fit? Or who is the best fit for Paolo Banchero?
Well, you just spoke so glowingly about Houston, and I think just based on his range, that's where I would put him. I don't care that they drafted Alperen Şengün and Usman Garuba a year ago. Who knows what happens with Christian Wood and Kevin Porter Jr., John Wall again. But I sort of like the fire and ice pairing of him with Jalen Green, who played really well to end the year. And Paolo would bring you immediate toughness, that winning mentality of being a Final Four and being at Duke and having so much success in high school. And it's a place that I think that will really embrace the chip on his shoulder he's going to have if he goes third overall. Paolo Banchero believes he's the best player in the draft and like lives it. It's not lip service. Like he thinks he's the best player and doesn't understand why he's not number one on all the boards. They're going to like get the most out of that with that fuel. I don't think he's going to get complacent and be there. Jalen Green heard the same stuff the first half of the season, and then he turned it on late at the end and had this great finish to the year. You take that guy, and now you have Paolo, and they're kind of running together. That's a good base to build upon, regardless of what happens with everything else on the roster.
So for Paolo, I considered his like reasonable draft range, 1 through 3 again. I would be surprised if he got out of the top three. Mm-hmm. So considering the top teams, right? Paolo loves to operate in that mid-post range, and Orlando's core, like Wendell Carter, as much as we like the idea of Wendell Carter shooting, tends to operate more in that area. They don't have a ton of shooting right now. I worry that Paolo would get a little bit crowded there and we wouldn't see the best out of him, right? While he's developing his three-point shot. I'm not worried about that happening long-term. And if Orlando thinks Paolo is the best player in the draft, I think they should just take him and like figure it out. I don't have that. I think Jabari is a little bit better than he is because I trust Jabari defensively and I trust his movement skills a little bit more and I trust the shot a little bit more. But like if Orlando thinks that, Orlando should take Paolo. Oklahoma City, I think it's easier to work around 2-star questionable defenders than it is to work around 3. And in Oklahoma City, if you drafted Paolo, you'd be working with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is not a very good defender right now, Josh Giddey, who is not a very good defender, and Paolo, who we have defensive questions about in terms of translation. Like, I thought that he got toasted a little bit on the perimeter defensively at Duke. I thought that some of it probably was engagement related at times. Like, Not always. I think in the games that mattered, he engaged and turned it up, but there were moments where it was concerning. In Houston, I worry a little bit about pairing that with Jalen Green, but I also think the way that he would play off of Jalen Green in a two-man game, and you could say this about Oklahoma City as well, I think the way he would play off of Jalen Green with his scoring ability in the two-man game would be exceptional, because the thing that Paulo adds that Jalen Green doesn't quite have yet and maybe could develop is the passing ability. Paulo's passing ability is and remains the thing that nobody in the mainstream seems to want to talk about, but is his best skill, I think. I think Paulo's best ability is his ability to diagnose, help defenses, and make plays for his teammates. Like, he throws pocket passes to Mark Williams. He throws lobs to Mark Williams. Mm-hmm. He throws high-level kickout reads, like, on the move while spinning. He's just a very effective player. I really want to see that two-man game with him and Jalen Green. Like, so that's what I keep coming back to.
I was like, where are we going? Are you going to throw, like, the Pistons at me or Pacers? And I'm glad Houston. We're 3-for-3 so far.
It's Houston, I think. Yeah. Like, I really, truly do believe that Houston would be great. I don't love the idea of pairing him in the front court with Alper and Şengün. Mm-hmm. I don't love the idea of pairing him in the front court with Domantas Sabonis either, if it was Sacramento. And they just expended an enormous resource to acquire Domantas Sabonis and Tyrese Halliburton. The Pistons would be great. I'm all for the Pistons, but again, I think that there's no way he falls to five. So I think it's Houston. I think Houston makes a whole lot of sense for Paulo, and I think the two-man game for Jalen Green and him is the ultimate building block for a team looking for building blocks after the departure of James Harden.
Yeah, they're great blocks, and that's why I went there too. Similar in age and like that similar sort of type of play, they can just play off of each other, and there's some simplicity to what they do while also having these athletic gifts. And yeah, Paulo is as good as a big man passer probably in this draft. I'm just off the top of my head, I can't really think of anyone else there.
I think he's the best passer like among all lottery picks in this class, like point blank. Like I think he's a better passer than Dyson Daniels. Yeah, I do.
The Dyson assist tape is pretty fancy. Like when he takes off the rim and throws that rope, whatever, 80 feet. It's like, yeah. Oh, that's impressive.
Spicy.
It's spicy, but he gets slowed down in the half court. He does. It's almost like Paulo's passes are more like weaponized in the half court. Dyson's are so like, there was one highlight I saw where he caught it. It was like on his back foot. He was like waiting for the alley-oop to develop and then threw it. That was just like G League defense. The guy wasn't close out hard enough. That pass isn't going to happen in the NBA. Where Paulo's, it's more in traffic, as I like to say.
Yeah, the question for Dyson, and we'll talk about Dyson, but like the reason I would take Paulo as a passer over Dyson is because I think that Paulo can actually break down defenders and create angles with his ability to create mismatches and force doubles in a way where I worry just a little bit about Dyson. I think that it's going to be a little bit more functional for Paulo. Okay, let's take a quick commercial break. We will be right back and we will discuss more of the best fits in the 2022 NBA draft. Let's talk about a different kind of performance than what we're talking about with the NCAA tournament. They want to help your performance in the bedroom. Joy mode, you know, just like on the basketball court, sometimes you might have an off night. Maybe you're playing okay and you want to take your game up a level even. That's where joy mode is going to come in. Don't grab some over-the-counter pills that you see at a gas station. They're going to often contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, carry the risk of several other health problems down the road. That's why we've partnered with Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all-natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to helping men perform better across their core functions. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. And get this, all ingredients have been assessed in peer-reviewed journals and researched in humans. Imagine this, it comes in a palm-sized packet, like your favorite electrolyte powder. Just simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water 45 minutes before sexual activity begins. and you're going to watch the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to use joymode.com for 20% off with code GAMETHEORY. That's GAMETHEORY. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GAMETHEORY. Not only is this the only supplement you'll need in the bedroom, but it also supports blood vessel support, cardiovascular and heart health, athletic performance, blood pressure, and general erection function. So why settle for anything less? Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better with Joy Mode? Benny, I got good news. We got questions, baby. We got questions in the mailbag as we get back into it. It's going to be great. We're going to have an awesome time here. But let's keep going through these draft
picks. Do we not have an awesome time? This is for our enjoyment, fulfillment, and just somehow it's posted on the internet and some people listen and watch.
It really is. That's what it feels like, right? Like, we just get to have these awesome conversations.
Talking hoops. Took a few notes so we talk hoops together. And now we get to talk Jaden Ivey, which is a great guy to talk hoops about.
And this is a fascinating one because... Yeah. The first three, like, it kind of went along the lines of the draft order, right? What do you think Jaden Ivey's best fit is in this class?
So
I have an answer. I've said Detroit previously, but I have a better answer, I think.
So I did go with Detroit, and I like, as much as I just sold Jabari Smith as a shooter to play with Cade Cunningham, I like the speed difference that Jaden Ivey has along with that pace game for Cade, because it gives him a different feel. You have Cade who's slow and steady, then can hit the gas, and Jaden's similar just with like supercharged ability to do that. Like his step on the gas is as crazy as anything we've seen in the last few years, I would say. Keeps the defenses guessing, keeps them on their heels. It's not going to be the same kind of way that they run their offense every single time. The other kind of twist I had is, my answer is the Pistons. It should be the Kings. It really should with them at four. But the Kings already prioritized Davion Mitchell over Tyrese Halliburton. So I would assume they do the same with Jaden Ivey. Like, we got our backcourt. We don't want to put another guy here. We just got rid of Tyrese Halliburton. So my short answer is Pistons, but I think it ultimately should be the Kings. Now give me something wild because I know it's coming.
Mine's the Pacers.
I don't hate that.
I think the Pacers should be trying to do whatever they can to move from 6 to 4. And here's the reason why. Jaden Ivey with what is the thing that we think he needs to play with? It's like a great ball handler that can also make decisions in high level passing reads, right? It's that. Tyrese Halliburton. Mm-hmm. Like if you mix him with Tyrese Halliburton, that is an unbelievable backcourt. That is a potential top three backcourt in the NBA at some point, if it all breaks right for those two. Those are two potential all-stars in the backcourt, and they complement each other perfectly because Tyrese is an incredible shooter as well off the ball.
It's also a testament to Tyrese Halliburton because a lot of these guys said, oh, well, it pairs nicely with Tyrese Halliburton. Everybody pairs nicely with Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah.
Shooters, guys who play fast, guys who play slow, pick and roll guys, pick and pop guys. We've been Tyrese Halliburton stands for a while, not as high during the draft. We weren't as, I don't know, I didn't think he was going to be a top 3-5 guy coming out.
I think I had him at like 6 or 7, so I was pretty high, but like –
But higher.
I didn't have
he's
him
higher
like
than
this.
That. I know they didn't win as many games as they'd like to, but I did like what they saw with Indiana's core. There's probably a piece or two away.
Yeah, I mean, what we're talking about here is why the Kings like fucked up trading him. I think because he just makes everyone's life easier. He's not the one you move. You move De'Aaron Fox, and then you figure out the rest around Halliburton. I think, but. I digress. Pairing Tyrese Halliburton, Malcolm Brogdon, also Miles Turner, who's like an incredible floor spacer at the five, incredible pick and pop weapon. Yeah. That floor is going to be emptied out in the middle of the court for Jaden Ivey to be able to attack. I think that's what they need to be doing. And like they have Chris Duarte, right? The trade that has come to mind for me.
I'll explain in a minute while I'm laughing. Go ahead.
Okay. the trade that has come to mind for me is if I was the Kings, right? And I'm considering trying to win now. Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you do number 6 in Chris Duarte for number 4? Kings slide back 2 spots, pick up Chris Duarte. And I would do that if I was the Pacers, because I think the Jaden.
I was going to say, if you're the Kings, you just want all the old draft picks. You got old Davion, old Duarte. What are we building here? What's the foundation?
Well, they could use another shooter, right?
Sure.
So then what you do is you go out and do you move number 6? And look, I don't think I would do this, but if I was the Kings and they are considering this and the Blazers are sitting there at number 7 and they have Jerami Grant and they want Jerami Grant, right? And maybe they move number 7 for Jerami Grant. Do you move number 6 for Jerami Grant then?
That's a lot of pieces. I think I'd take number 6. I would.
I would rather have number 6 than Jerami Grant personally, but I wonder if the pressure to win there is so much. You know, you pick up Chris Duarte, you pick up Jerami Grant. That's a pretty good draft haul, like to help you win games tomorrow at the end of the day.
But you're selling out in the future a little bit, because you also don't know how often. Well, I guess the Kings are always kind of this range, but you don't know how often you're going to get a pick in, I'd say, top 5, but not top 6 range. It doesn't happen every single year, or shouldn't happen every single year. And now you win and now you're the 9th pick. I don't know if that really moved the needle enough.
Yeah, let me be clear. If I was the Kings, I would just take Jaden Ivey at the end of the day. Yeah, even though I don't think it's the best fit, because they have De'Aaron Fox, they have Davion Mitchell, I would still just take Jaden Ivey and then figure out what to do, you know, over the course of the next 6 months, or maybe even over the course of the next month. Like, I would really strongly consider just moving De'Aaron Fox, right? Yeah. But I also am cognizant that they seem to want to win. And I wonder if that's a way to do it. I'm just trying to come up with ideas at the end of the day.
You're an ideas guy.
Yeah, I'm an ideas man.
So as much as you are an ideas guy, the reason I'm laughing is, now this is the second time you've done this. You've read my bullet points for the player or the team right before I did it for like a different player. So
no,
are we good with our fit here?
Let's go.
To the next guy.
Next
guy is Keegan Murray, who I think the ideal fit is the Indiana Pacers. So for what everything Sam said, but here's my sell. You have Miles Turner. You have Tyrese Halliburton. You have Malcolm Brogdon. You have Chris Duarte. TJ Warren was injured. He's a free agent. Who knows? I like the IQ of Tyrese Halliburton and Keegan Murray mixed together. That is a slice and dice combination of half court where you're playing those two out of pick and roll. Chris Duarte in a corner, Malcolm Brogdon in a corner. You have Miles Turner rolling up high, shooting 35% from three. Pick your poison, because you're going to be beat one of those places. And then if Tyrese wants to run, Keegan Murray can run with him. That's the fit I like the best for Keegan. I liked yourself for Jaden Ivey too. If I were the Pacers, that would be the guy that I'd want in that range.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I think he'd be the best fit for the Pacers too. Like, I love everything about that fit. And the other thing is that you didn't mention is he really complements Miles Turner's like one deficiency really well, in that he's not an incredible defensive rebounder. Keegan is really good at grabbing. He can go on the break. He can attack. I think that would actually really help Tyrese Halliburton a little bit as well. Halliburton can spray to the corner while Keegan brings the ball up and attacks. I also really like the Keegan fit to the Pacers. I think that if we were talking purely for Keegan, that's probably the spot I like best. I don't love the Kings, because I think that Domantas Sabonis and Keegan defensively is a little too concerning for me. You know, the Pistons work. Like, I think the Pistons are a really good fit for Keegan as well.
That could be the landing point. It's the same sell. It's a shooter, then an offensive, versatile player for Cade Cunningham to work off of.
Yeah, totally. So I like all of this. I'm trying to think who is next, right?
I had just a list, not a master board, but the next one I had here was Shaedon Sharpe. So why don't you lead off? You take Shaedon Sharpe off the board for us. What is the best team fit for the international man of mystery from Canada, from Kentucky? Kind of.
I believe the Pistons for him. And the reason I say the Pistons for Shaedon Sharpe as the best fit is his ability to shot create out of isolation and out of advantage situations, I think meshes really, really well with Cade Cunningham. Cade is going to be able to twist and manipulate the defense. It's kind of similar to the argument I made with Jaden Ivey, right? Cade is going to be able to twist and manipulate the defense, and then he's going to be able to throw it over to that second side, and he's going to be able to find Shaden, where Shaden's going to be able to potentially get a scrambling defender, coming back out to him, and he's going to be able to attack, close out, and get to the rim. Or he's going to maybe get a mismatch when the scramble happens, and then he can really create off the isolation and get to his step-back jumper. His ability to move out in transition is, I think, really helpful for Cade. He really headmans the ball. Yeah, I think that Detroit makes a lot of sense for Shaden. I think Shaden, makes a lot of sense for Detroit. I would probably go more in the Shaden Ivy direction if I was Detroit than if I was, thinking more along the lines of like Keegan and all of those guys.
A lot of the Shaden Sharp highlights from Grassroots from high school are from those kind of like skips where he's baseline, can rip through, take one dribble, gather, and try to jump as high as he can, which is very high, and rip the rim off and bring a defender with him because he's so strong. My pick for Shaden Sharp is a San Antonio. It's an immediate infusion of strength athleticism to the Spurs, a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 3 years. You have to take a swing. You have to add more talent. This gives them a different look than what they have. They have a great development program. You look at DeJounte Murray. You look at Keldon Johnson, both picked 29th overall. DeJounte Murray, most improved player in the NBA, or one of them. You can throw the award out. Who cares? Keldon Johnson's on Team USA. I mean, think about that. What happens now when they can have their hands on the 9th pick in the draft? What does he look like in 3 years? You can pair him with Josh Primo. I mean, give me a break. What's better than that?
Yeah, I like the Spurs for him as well. I don't have a strong take. I know that you just wanted to get your Primo love out there. I'm not taking
it. I was waiting for your reaction. I just wanted like the one raised eyebrow, like, okay, great, move on.
I refuse to take the bait on that.
You know what's like the bait, though? You don't put the bat signal for questions. I don't look. I like to be surprised, but you did it so early that I did look as we're recording. Somebody writes every single time in almost every single video, when will Josh Primo be an all-star?
We need to have that. Here, hold on. Let's shout. No, seriously, let's shout this guy out because he does ask every single time. It's
it might be
3113RY. When will Josh Primo be an all-star? He asks every time. Shout out, man. We really appreciate it. Penny, I'm just going to give you the floor. I don't have a take on this.
You started a playing game. We're getting there. We're getting closer. This is actually a big season for him because the sell was what pick is he in this draft? Is he better than 12th? Yeah. Is he probably 6th or 7th? I'd say probably, and especially what we saw him do during the G League showcase. He's lined up against those guys. They played the Ignite. I'm like, I'd take Primo 10 times out of 10 over anybody on this team, and we're talking about Dyson Daniels as a top 10 pick. He'll have to show it now on the court in an NBA game for extended minutes. I think the Spurs have done a good job bringing along slowly and then toward the end of the year saying, you're going to play now. You're going to play some minutes. The season's kind of over. It's kind of decided. I'm still encouraged. We'll see. Let's talk in a year.
Okay. Let's do my guy next. Let's do Jeremy Sochan.
Yeah.
This is a fascinating one.
It is.
My immediate take was the Spurs for Sochan. And it was for a lot of the reasons you said. On top of that, I think that his defensive versatility would fit really well with what Pop wants to do. He'd get to stay in Texas where he's already comfortable. Not that that really matters.
Well, he's also a nomad. He's lived in 5 countries in 5 years. But yes, he wouldn't have to move too far.
Let's give him some stability, right? The Spurs need a big, like, defensive minded four man and like a big four that just can essentially play the role, right? Like they need somebody in that spot. Keldon Johnson's a really good fit with him, I think, because of his attack oriented nature of his game. I love the idea of pairing him with guys like Josh Primo, with DeJounte Murray to an extent. Like, I think that the lack of shooting between Murray and Sochan would cause some potential issues, but
totally.
I do like the idea of getting Sochan to a place where I think he'd be able to play relatively early, because I do think Jeremy will be able to make an impact early defensively. And he's smart enough to where I do think he's going to be able to make an impact, even if the shooting takes a while to come along. The Spurs have a really good track record of shooting and developing shooting. My other spot is another team that has great track record developing shooting, and it's the New Orleans Pelicans.
Damn it. Yes, I agree.
That's your fit? Yeah, no, I think it's great.
I had two. I'll start with the Spurs. I don't know if they need another non-shooter there. I agree. You need some size, so that's why you'll hear Jalen Duren, maybe Mark Williams. I don't know. Jakob Poeltl's going to be a free agent, what, in a year? He needs sort of a insurance policy or whatever it may be. I don't have it off the top of my head right here. I had the Pelicans as well. When we did the prospect videos, we didn't call out the Pelicans, I think, and somebody called us out for not calling the Pelicans. But I like it because he can just go in and play defense. That's his strength. The offense isn't there, fine. The CJ McCollum trade worked. You have Brandon Ingram. Herb Jones can now play offense and is awesome. Trey Murphy's getting there, throwing a healthy Zion, Jonas Valanciunas. That's a really, really good core of guys that pushed the Suns to six games in the playoffs. The other one that sort of from a team, just the whole is there, is the Blazers. That's the cleanest fit per se. Yeah. I mean, they need something out of the four spot. Jeremy Sohan could be that guy. They may also need more offense. That's why I didn't pick them, because they ranked 27th in points scored per game. I know it's a little skewed because Damian Lillard didn't play. It's going to get better, but they need to win now. And usually winning now means an offensive scoring hub and not this defensive hub as Jeremy Sohan is.
Yeah, you know, like another team that makes sense is the Thunder as well. Like the Thunder will give him the time necessary. Like if you paired him and Chet Holmgren in the front court as your four and five, and you just let him loose defensively, I mean, that might be my favorite potential pairing that could realistically happen in this draft class.
Do you think realistically he lasts till 12, though?
Look, I think it's a definite potential outcome. I don't know that he will last until 12. I think that part of what makes Jeremy Sohan so valuable is the fact that he can be a fit for a drastic number of teams in the top 10, right? Like, I think he fits really well with the Blazers. I think you can make a case if you're the Pacers, even, that like his fit next to Miles Turner, next to all of those guys, like really works well. I think you can make a case that his fit with New Orleans is phenomenal, with the Spurs is phenomenal, with the Thunder. You know, if you put him with the Cavs, like continue to just develop those, you know, ridiculous defensive wings, right? Like find as many of them as you can. You'd have to continue to work on the shooting, but like, you know, if you want to continue to just build the best defensive core in the NBA, sure, why not, right? But the idea of why I like Jeremy Sohan is he fits 90 different places in the NBA.
That's my next sentence. Everybody needs a Jeremy Sohan. I'm running down the lottery. Right. It's like he can fit there, he can fit there. There's not really anywhere that stands out that says, no, that just doesn't mesh as well as the next one.
Right. Who do you want to go with next? Who are we up to?
I think we're up to Benedict Mathurin from Arizona.
Okay. Where do you want to go?
Second. I didn't, this was a tougher one for me. I went with the Portland Trailblazers, and I did because it is a scorer with size. Yeah. He is further along than say an AJ Griffin or Malachi Branham or Johnny Davis. It's a different look than Damian Lillard, Anfernee Simons, who had a good year without him there. It's sort of like this combo of the two of them together. Mm-hmm. I know the Blazers also want to win now or make a move to win now. The best move for them in this range is probably a trade. But if they don't, and just for this exercise here, Benedict Mathurin turns 20 as a rookie, so he's like a little bit older than more of these expected lottery guys. I don't know what the timeline is and if we're just purely speculating that they want to win now, but it's more size in the backcourt. You could say those two are paired up. He's already worked out there. He's been working out really good. The feedback from everywhere is that's the way it's been out there during this pre-draft circuit. So that's why I went with the Blazers for Ben Mathurin here.
Do you know where new assistant general manager of the Portland Trail Blazers, Mike Schmitz, went to school?
He went to school at the University of Arizona.
He did. So he's going to have good intel.
Well, somebody didn't somebody also pull out that when, as soon as Mike took the job, which is awesome for him. He's everywhere. He works really hard. I'm happy for him. Somebody pulled off the ESPN like top 20. Like, we officially have the Trailblazers draft board. Like, here it is. They picked seventh. And I think it might actually have been Ben Mathurin or whatever the pick was. I got to get a kick out of that.
Yeah, look, I don't know how much of those rankings is John, how much of it is Mike. I haven't talked to John and Mike for, like, I've talked to Mike maybe semi recently, but I haven't talked to John and Mike, for a couple years. Like, we're friendly. We see each other when we're out. Like, it's a what's up. It's, I like both those guys a lot. I hope they have respect for me on some level. And I have a good relationship with Mike for sure. But they do have like pretty different takes on things.
Sure.
For the most, that's just like a fun joke, right? But like they have different enough takes on things to where I wouldn't necessarily expect that is what you should expect on draft night.
If you put on your tin foil hat here and you're talking about Ben Mathurin or talk about Arizona, he definitely has an inside track being there. But I think per his contract, he doesn't technically start as assistant GM until this draft cycle is over.
Yeah, that is accurate. I mean, Joe Cronin's going to be calling him. I will say this too about the Blazers. Like, everything I understand is that Joe Cronin is the guy that tends to swing for upside more so than the safe pick. So could that be, honestly, like, Ben Mathurin's only 20 years old. Like, he's very young and very good already. And I think there is a case that you could make that he has tremendous upside, but does he swing for Jeremy Sohan? Does he swing more for like the projecty guy that could be better? The Blazers are fun, though. I actually really like that pick. It was either them or it was New Orleans for me, just because I think New Orleans needs to keep finding more shooters, even though they just drafted Trey Murphy last year. If you're going to play Zion and you're going to have Herb Jones playing a substantial role and you still have Jonas Valanciunas under contract, you're going to need as many shooters as possible to surround those guys with. And Mathurin fits like in a pretty substantial way there. I do really like that as well.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay. Let's move to Dyson Daniels.
Dyson. Okay.
You're up. My fit there was also the Pelicans.
Oh, I like the Pelicans. That was my second
because choice. What is the one thing we say that Dyson needs?
There's a few things that Dyson needs. What's the one you're thinking of? I was going
to
say
shooting. Like, needs to be able to shoot consistently. Yeah.
I know there's a must.
Like, if he shoots consistently, he's at the very least a starter and a high-level impact player on a playoff team, right?
Yeah.
Like, no questions, right? Well, I mean, you just listen to David Griffin on Ryan Russillo's podcast. Shout out Russillo. The thing that he said is that we feel confident that we can get guys to improve their shooting because we have Fred Vinson, who's one of the best shooting coaches in the NBA. Dyson fits a lot of what they need and what they could use. I mean, the ball is going to be in Brandon Ingram's hands a lot. It's going to be in Zion Williamson's hands a lot. I think that it makes a lot of sense there to go with Dyson because his shot isn't broken. If it's just small things, like, you could see a world where Fred Vinson has him shooting like at a reasonable level at low volume this year and then like at medium volume next year, even.
Eliminate the dip. He has a big dip when he catches and goes down. I'm laughing because you mentioned the podcast that David Griffin's on. You're taking some fingerprints on it. And if you watched the Celtics game last night, I hope you did. One of the reporters asked Draymond Green, said, "Hey, you kind of say a lot on your podcast about like defensive coverages. Do you think like the opposing teams listen to that?" That's neither here nor there. The fact that podcasts have become such this main space thing for clues in basketball is just amazing to me. For Dyson Daniels, I went with Washington. And why I went with Washington is they've needed a point guard for a few years now, and he's not a traditional point, but he can guard or defer on offense. He can become more of a point guard later in the year. It works well next to Bradley Beal, as he doesn't always need the ball. Dyson doesn't always need the ball to be effective. Brad Beal can have the ball in his hands, be ball dominant, be comfortable with that. And then if they want to go the route where it's flip the ball to the other side to Dyson for Brad to come down for pinoff, to him to make some plays. You can do that. And Dyson can still cut and move. It's a youth play. He's a very young player. The development can still be there. And it's not have to be like day one, ball in your hands. We don't have any guards figured out.
Yeah, I also love this fit. I think this makes so much sense next to Bradley Beal, especially if Beal is going to stick around there long term. I would absolutely like sprint to the podium if I was the Wizards and Dyson Daniels was still on the board. Would be enormous for them. I think that he adds every single thing that they really truly need from an organizational perspective, if they're going to continue to go down this road that they're going down developmentally. I love that idea. I love Dyson Daniels to the Wizards. I think it makes so much sense. Okay. Next up, we have Johnny Davis, and I am absolutely giving you the floor on Johnny Davis.
Thank you, Johnny Davis. And this is probably lower, so I don't want people to yell at me. Agents, GMs. Oh, I talked to so many GMs here yelling at me. I'm going to go with the Cleveland Cavaliers for Johnny Davis. Here's why. Say Colin Sexton's out. He's a restricted free agent. You can roll out a lineup of Darius Garland, Johnny Davis, Isaac Okoro if you want, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen. Defense factors into a team that's already upgraded their defense the last two drafts, and now you have this tough kid who has the defense. We're not knocking that, just maybe a little bit of the size because he's not huge as a guard.
Yep.
But that works because the rest of the guys behind you are all like longer dimensionally than a traditional front court would be. You don't need him to have that offensive output there, the type of guy that Sexton was, or even the type of guy usage rate wise that he was at Wisconsin, where he was the literal head of the snake for that team. This is still probably lower that he does go, and it's not a knock on him. It's just a much better situation for him to come in and be a piece of a borderline playoff team day one than it would be to have to be the foundational piece if he goes in the top seven.
This was also my favorite fit for him. I totally agree with you. I would love to see him next to Darius Garland. I would love to see Johnny Davis next to Evan Mobley. His ability to create shots, I think particularly getting him in situations where he can be the second side guy and can then create off of that, I think he could actually derive some more attempts at the rim as opposed to settling in the mid-range more often because he is a good athlete. I really quite like that fit. Like, I think it just makes a lot of sense. Like, if that would happen, I would probably really strongly look at sign-in trades for Colin Sexton at that point. I would, yeah. If he fell to 14, I think it'd be a great win for Johnny Davis. Another team where I think it makes sense, like the Knicks make some Knicks sense. Like, you put him next to RJ Barrett. I think that you'd have just two really tough dudes that drive. They like mid-range shots, obviously, and like you'd have to worry about the way that would work, but like, I don't know, two tough two-way defensive guards that can also create their own shot. Those are guys that are hard to find, man. Like, they just are. And I really like the idea of combining those two. Maybe that's how you make it work with Emmanuel Quickly at the lead guard spot.
That was my one hold up. What I know they're high on Quickly. What do you do and how does that work with him and RJ Barrett?
Oh, I think it helps Emmanuel Quickly. Like, Emmanuel Quickly can, you know, play both on and off the ball. He does need two good defensive wings next to him to be successful. I think that's how you make an Emmanuel Quickly led backcourt work long term. I think that the Knicks and the Cavs are my two favorites for Johnny Davis. I really like the idea of both of them. You're up now again with Mark Williams.
Mark Williams, easy. We've talked about this 1,000 times over. It's the Charlotte Hornets. Yeah. He defends with the mean streak, and that's what they need. Block some shots, can switch a little bit on the perimeter, rim run, catch lobs. LaMelo needs the horses to run with him. He's a beast. It's the exact role that he had at Duke. Just do that now in the NBA. We're not asking more of you. We're not asking less of you. Crank the motor all the way up. Just have that energy in the front court, and you're our guy.
Yeah, I think Mark Williams' best fit is unequivocally the Charlotte Hornets. I need to see Mark Williams running the floor, catching lobs from LaMelo Ball. I need to see LaMelo Ball sprinting the court with Miles Bridges on one side and Mark Williams on the other side. Like, this is the most fun potential outcome. And then Mark actually fills a substantial need for them defensively as arguably the best rim protector in this draft class. He fits a need for them. It's a perfect fit for him. Everything across the board says Mark Williams makes sense for the Charlotte Hornets.
Don't mess it up. Yes.
Here's the one thing that doesn't make sense here. It's that Michael Jordan is the owner of the Charlotte Hornets, and would he really truly take a Duke guy in the lottery?
That's a good twist. Does he just take Oshai because he's old? He likes taking seniors. Who's older? Who else we get?
Mark's not young. Like, it's fine. No, I mean, he doesn't take that many old guys anymore. It's not that bad.
Yeah, it's an old draft joke for us old draft heads here. But yeah, Mark Williams, don't do this. Don't break our hearts. You have two chances to get him too at 13 and 15. If they go anti-Mark Williams, both of them, I'm going to lose my mind.
And here's the other thing too. You should take him at 15, not at 13, because the Cavs have Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. Do you really think they're taking a big at 14?
It would just be heartbreaking if that's their guy. Like, say, NBA teams, their boards don't look like ours. Mark Williams would be third on like their board, right? If you play that strategy, and for whatever reason, the Cavs like, yeah, we're trading it to Milwaukee. They wanted to pick, and Milwaukee's like, oh, yeah, we love Mark Williams. Then yeah, it's like, oh, what have we done?
Yeah, maybe you
do. So how confident, how steady is your poker hand during this play?
Yeah. No, I like that. That's a fair point. Okay. Jalen Duren, next up.
Jalen Duren. I also had the San Antonio Spurs. We've talked about Jakob Poeltl's free agency upcoming. I looked at one more season, and then he's a free agent. It's toughness up front. Again, you have the development, the skill work the Spurs have done in the past. Bring him along slowly. He only turns 19 in November, and we've given him a rough shake of it and expected him to be this 20-year-old as a freshman. He's not, even though he looks like it. If you looked at his draft pictures, he looks ridiculous, like absolutely chiseled out of granite, looks in the best shape of his life. Memphis was a lot for him, expected a lot. He wasn't ready for it. Should he have done another year of high school? It's another podcast for another time. He doesn't have to be that way in San Antonio.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for a lot of the same reasons we said Mark Williams, like Jalen Duren, again, makes a lot of sense for Charlotte. Very similar in terms of what the idea is behind what they can do. I will say that Jalen Duren, I think, will throw down cooler dunks and catch cooler lobs from LaMelo because yes. One of like Jalen Duren,
it will be cooler. I promise you that.
Yeah. One of Jalen Duren's best skills is that ability to just like catch everything with one hand with his enormous
hands.
Oh,
it's
like
Superman. And when he takes off two feet, one hand, he's all the way back. It's like a la Dwight Howard back in the day.
Unbelievable. So yeah, I like the idea of Jalen Duren to Charlotte. I think he makes a lot of sense there. You know, if the Knicks, again, like Mark, for this, it's the same as the Mark Williams stuff. Like, if the Knicks decide to move on from Mitchell Robinson, like, you can make a case for them. You can make a case for San Antonio. Absolutely, I think. You can make a case for Portland if Portland decides, like, hey, we don't want to keep Yusuf Nurkic. Although it seems like, based off of their public comments, that they're planning to keep Yusuf Nurkic. And thus, that kind of falls apart a little bit. Yeah, Washington has a big. Cleveland obviously has multiple bigs. It would not surprise me if one of Mark Williams or Jalen Duren slides down the board just a little bit, depending on the way the draft shakes out, just because it's harder to find landing spots. Like, Washington at 10 should not be taking a big. New Orleans should not be taking a big. Indiana should not be taking a true big. If the Knicks are re-signing Mitchell Robinson, they shouldn't be taking one.
Right.
Like, Charlotte should only be taking one at 13 and 15. So that takes away a pick. Cleveland should not be taking a big with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. Like, there's just a lot there. Obviously teams can move up and down the board, but how many teams really want to give up multiple assets for a true center? I don't know. It's questionable.
Yeah. And that, once you start, that's what the name of the board, that's why guys start going down, because it's a board. It's still team fit. People will yell and say, don't draft for team fit. But if you signed a guy to a mega contract in the front court, you're not going to take another center. That's just the way it is. It's better if it's more versatile guards and wings. Like, that's not necessarily the same thing. You have a five that you're paying a ton of money, unless it's a leverage play to get him out or to expand and do something else. You're not taking him. That's it.
Right. Like that, that's the space where team fit like really truly matters, I think, is like if you have a ton of resources expended in the front court, like Cleveland does already, you should not be taking a big in the front court, just period, point blank. Okay. The last guy we have on our list here is AJ Griffin.
You're up.
Oh man. This is gross.
I can start. This might be like a little bit lazy. As much of the reason I said about Johnny Davis adding defense to Cleveland, I think Cleveland just like mask some of the deficiencies defensively that AJ Griffin has. It's the protection behind them. Just come in and shoot the basketball. He had an unbelievable shooting season as a freshman at Duke. If he's just there as a jump shooter and if he's beat off the bounce, you have two or three rim protectors behind you or rotational defense. That would be great for him as a rookie.
Yeah, I think San Antonio makes sense for him just as another wing shooter. I think that Oklahoma City could take a dive into the AJ Griffin like boat just because if you have Josh Giddey, you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, having a killer floor spacer next to those guys would be really, really helpful. I'm trying to think. We've got Cleveland here. You mentioned Cleveland. I think that makes an awful lot of sense. If Charlotte decides to move Gordon Hayward this summer because they're going to give Miles Bridges a lot of money and they don't replace him with another wing, that is an interesting potential fit if you see like the chess moves down the line. And obviously Charlotte, you know, has a plan for what they're going to do, I would imagine. I think that all those teams make a lot of sense. Cleveland would be phenomenal. I love the idea of Cleveland.
Yeah, me too. And you know what I love the idea of? I thought we were going to miss a team. We did a fit for every single team in the lottery, including Oklahoma City at 12, who really, like, we didn't have to, like, have a fit for. But we still did. So if Jeremy Sohan's there, run. Take Sohan, take Chet. That's a great 1-2 punch from the 4-5 position.
Okay. Mailbag time.
What's the number?
I don't know. I kind of lost track.
So many. Lost track. I'll look. I won't look at the questions. How many?
Let's see here.
This works.
Let's see here. Is it possible for Jalen Duren to get to a Robert Williams level down the road from SportsFan 405?
There is. And the way we just talked about you walking away from the camera, the way we just talked about potentially a slide down the board, if Jalen Duren slides down the board and ends up with a team kind of like the Celtics, like Robert Williams did, where there's no expectations of coming and being the guy, and we're hailing Robert Williams when he has the games of 8 points, 8 rebounds, there is a cat or dog on the screen.
She demanded to come in again, so I had to let her in. Second show in a row, folks.
I don't know if that's good luck or bad luck. So my short answer is yes. I do think he could be like Robert Williams, but you have to also be drafted in like the Robert Williams range. If you think you're taking Robert Williams 8th, you know, teams and fan bases could be disappointed, but he could get to that type of player that Robert Williams is.
I think Robert Williams has always been a little bit lighter on his feet than what Jalen Duren is. The guy who reminds me most of Robert Williams in this class is actually Ismail Kamagate, the more I watch.
All right.
He's very light on his feet. He's very active. He has that same like 7'4" wingspan, despite being, you know, 6'10 and a half, 6'11", something like that. Kamagate has a ways to go. Like, let's just be very clear. Are you just laughing at the dog?
Dude, you're a draft analyst and a Bond villain at the same time. You're giving me an Ishmael Kamagate rundown. Hold the dog in your lap, and I'm not supposed to laugh. Like, his feet are so light, Mr. Bond. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah. He stays very light on his feet.
The dog. Okay, yeah.
Can move on the perimeter very, very well. Has some things to work out. Like, it's going to take time for Kamagate. Like, his positioning, his use of angles, not great. But I actually do have a first round grade on Kamagate, and I wasn't sure I was going to get there, but I actually have him ahead of Walker Kessler on my board.
I have Kamagate 41st. I do have him behind Kessler, but he's climbing, rising, I guess. Somewhere in that 30 to 40 place for me. I liked him when I did the international deep dive back on on guys. I don't know if I'm necessarily as high as you, but yeah, like him.
And look, I'm not saying Kamigate is like going to be Robert Williams, because you should take Robert Williams in the lottery in this draft, very obviously. But like,
yeah.
I think in terms of similarities, in terms of the way that they move, in terms of the way that they block shots, in terms of the way that for projects entering the NBA from like a developmental standpoint, I see a lot of similarities there, prospect wise.
Yeah. And I was also reminded by my friend Pat, and I forgot about this, that draft night, the Robert Williams slide, every pick, they didn't say Robert Williams from like 20 down. We were like fist bumping, like, all right, two more. We're like almost there. Let's take it. Let's take the baggage. He's late, whatever. Like, we'll take him. And it's worked out. And he's a huge piece of the Celtics run here right now in the playoffs. On one leg.
From Anthony D. 80. Shout out, Anthony. Just the best. I actually know Anthony. He's just the best. Who has the best chance to play the big wing two-way role at a playoff level in the lotto / top 20?
Jeez, what a loaded question. There's a lot of pieces to that. A big wing two-way role in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Like day one, or are we talking like 5 years?
Eventually. I certainly think that it's like later on. Yeah. Is what he said.
But are we saying like a number one or two option, or like, oh, that guy's like doing it?
I'm imagining more of like a role player in this regard. Maybe we answer both. Maybe we answer like star quality, outside of the top, you know, five guys, and then maybe we answer role player.
My guy for role player is Oshai Agbaji, because he defends, and you can just envision in your head him hitting corner threes, and we start having the narrative and with each other of, well, how did he slide? Well, he is older. It took him a while to get there. The upside isn't there as much. But I could see him being a contributor fairly easily on a playoff team if he's not called on to be a number one or two. Be number five or six or seven, or here he comes off the bench. It's kind of like Golden State. Like, they're in the people they have come off the bench, like, how is Otto Porter come off the bench? How is Jordan Poole on his team? And Wiggins? Like, it'll be like one of those situations where he just pops up and you're surprised, but not really.
So Anthony is talking about this from a Knicks perspective, because again, like, I know Anthony. He's thinking about it from their perspective.
Well,
so
Knicks want stars, so they don't want a 15th guy.
Well, I'm assuming he means more in like the 10 range, like that like late lottery, early teens. So I think Ochai makes sense. I would go Sohan as like a guy that I think could fall that far. I mean, Jeremy Sohan is, look, my love of Jeremy Sohan in this class, just defensively and everything. We have a video up on YouTube. This gives us a great chance to plug the YouTube channel. We have a video up on Jeremy Sohan on 10 of these other prospects. We're doing more of them over the course of the next couple of weeks. Go check out the video we did on Jeremy Sohan. It's like 15 minutes of me explaining basically why I love him on that
end. It's a 15-minute love letter from Sam.
Yeah, he's like 6'9", moves his feet exceptionally well. I think he's the most switchable big forward that can guard 1 through 5 in this class. I would go Jeremy Sohan.
But two-way, can he score? Can he shoot? That's what I worry about.
It's a big question, for sure. Yeah. Okay. Next question here. Best snack food for when you're diving into film? This is from Bryant West.
Great one. It depends on the hour of the day, I guess. I've become a big – you're going to make fun of the way I say this. I've become a big popcorn guy for watching film. Yes, popcorn, not popcorn. Are you saying pop or pup?
You're saying pup.
I am. Yeah. I think it's a New England thing. Yeah. I think popcorn is my answer. That or Pirate's Booty. But Pirate's Booty is like you can't be taking notes when you're eating Pirate's Booty. There's too much of like the residue.
What in the fuck is Pirate's Booty?
Wait, what? You know what Pirate's Booty is?
No.
Oh, they're like healthy cheese curls. They don't have this. Isn't like a Boston thing, right? Like this is
definitely a Boston. Like, oh no. Like, I've lived in Pittsburgh.
Good. If Pirate's Booty's listening, I'm here. I'll send you my address. You can DM me. Send me some product. I'll keep pumping it out here. That's one of my favorites.
Columbus. I've lived in Denver. I've lived in LA. Like,
look it up.
I've never seen this shit. anywhere.
Look it up. Are you looking up? It's a real thing. It is. It's fantastic. I eat it. My son eats it. I honestly can't buy it because I eat it like too fast. And I'm like, ah, that's stupid.
What is my answer for this? Probably Reese's Pieces for me. Ooh, I'm a big Reese's Pieces guy. I eat Reese's Pieces while I watch movies, you know, while I, like I'll like just lay them out like on the table here.
We get it. You're a movie guy. You liked E.T.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that connection until you just said that. I'm real dumb. Okay. Let's see here. I do like this question. Who would be the more valuable player if they added a high 30s three-point shot to their game, Tari Eason or Dyson Daniels?
What did Dyson Daniels shoot this year? 26% from three like the G League? Yeah. And what was Tari Eason?
He was like 35.
I always go with like the more versatile, bigger kind of front courty guys that aren't really front courty guys. So I'd say Tari Eason there. Is that Dyson Daniels like pretty close as it is, and you want the jump shot to come around. But if Tari adds that with the transition stuff, with some of the defense, I think I would go with him.
Dyson's not that close to high 30s.
He's 20. He was 26. It would sound like he was 19%, is my point. High 30s is like a very good shooter from three, though, just to be very clear.
I think my answer would be Dyson.
I want more Dyson foot speed than jumper, though. Like Tari, the rest of the stuff like isn't too bad, but the jumper would be a major separator. You'd be a stretch big-ish that can kind of guard threes at his size. Yeah, I'd go with him. I'd go with Eason. I get your point with Dyson Daniels.
Okay. We got a lot of Dalen Terry questions, and we've talked so much about Dalen Terry on this podcast.
How high is too high? That's the question. That's what I'm.
What role do you see Dalen Terry playing in an NBA offense? I think is a better question. This is from Jeb Bennett, scouting Red Zone. I see him eventually being able to knock down shots, attack closeouts, and make high level passing reads off of those closeouts. Maybe as a secondary ball handler at times, because I think you want to be able to take advantage of his high level decision making. But that would probably be more second units at the end of the day. I see him more as being able to shoot at some point and then being able to make passing reads off of when guys close out on him heavily. He's going to be able to make high level like kickouts, and I did Dalen Terry's draft guide profile earlier this week because I wanted to wait until like he was 100% in the draft. Mm-hmm. The thing that I remembered about Dalen Terry now, he's fucking unbelievably precise at throwing backdoor bounce passes to cutters.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've seen someone who's like that precise with it. Like, and he throws them like low to the ground too.
Yeah,
on the they just pass, like skip off the ground and they hit the guy like right in the fucking right where his hands are.
I thought you were gonna say something eloquent like skipping a rock across the ocean. You're like right in his fucking hands. I see that coming. I like Dalen Terry. I have him 16th right now. I don't know. Maybe I'm nuts. Maybe this is kind of rewriting the board or whatever I'm talking about doing. But to play the one and the two, he probably won't start on the ball as a rookie, but can still add that passing, that slashing, that cutting defensively, can get out and make plays while on the break. His personality is really shining through in both workouts and in interviews. Yeah. He's gone through the process and rave reviews almost everywhere he's been. So I'm not surprised of him moving up. I thought he'd be a borderline first-round guy, but sometimes post-March, this is what happens.
From John Soch, who were Matt Penny's favorite players from Pangos? We didn't answer that at the top.
I kind of did. Xavier Booker was, I think, my favorite long-term prospect. Bay Fall was very, very good. I thought Elliot Cadeau had a dunk, played well from the guard spot. I'm trying to think more off the top of my head. It was pretty balanced, but Xavier Booker to me was really like the guy who I hadn't seen in a year and had significantly improved, and all the highest major stuff is beyond warranted.
Let's see here.
Oh, I like Caden Cooper too. I really liked his energy. He was like, he plays for Skill Factory out of Georgia, but I got like in a good way, some Katie Johnson vibes from like the wing, just really into like every single play and intense. I want that guy on my team.
Let's see.
We're scrolling. We're downloading. We're still here.
We're scrolling. We're still scrolling.
Your podcast did not skip. Don't turn it off yet. We'll finish strong.
Over the next 5 years, this is from Courtney Kennedy. Why is everyone so sure Anthony Edwards will be better than Jalen Green? I'm not like sure of it. I've always liked Anthony Edwards' like intersection of power and explosiveness a little bit better, and I've always liked his upside a little bit more defensively because of that than Jalen Green. But I don't think that's a sure thing by any stretch of the imagination. They're both like fucking 21 years old, or Jalen I think is 20. So
I'd still take Anthony Edwards. They're both very charismatic. They both have this really deep belief in their game, and people are really mad on the internet, because that's what we do on the internet. Really mad because Anthony Edwards was asked his dream starting five, and he listed himself at the two, which is awesome. Like you should. You should list yourself at the two.
I love it. I like genuinely love when guys do that. It just makes me smile. Like, why would you ever complain about people doing that?
that was the scout on Anthony. Like, yeah, he thinks he's the best. Good. He is. There's 20 points per game.
Okay. I think that's all we're going to do. Okay, here's a fun one. This is what we'll close on. This is a draft. Draft two-way or training camp. It's like MFK, basically.
hold on. Draft. Okay. Do I do three of them? I gotta write this down. I'm gonna forget. Draft, two-way training camp. Draft. Okay, go ahead.
Jared Roden, Ron Harper Jr., Keon Ellis.
Jared Roden. Okay. Ron Harper Jr. And who is my last one? Keon Ellis.
Keon Ellis.
Okay, go first.
I think that order. I would draft.
What was it again? Draft.
Draft, two-way. Training camp. I would draft Jared Roden. I would two-way Ron Harper Jr. I would training camp Keon Ellis.
I would just flip-flop Keon Ellis and Harper, but I had the same for Jared Roden, which is sneaky because another one that I didn't think like coming, but there's been some positivity and some buzz around him too.
Actually, no, we will do this question is the last one. What Hunter Burns here is asking this. Who talks the most shit out of the projected top eight? Asking for a Pelicans fan.
Ooh, that depends. There's levels to it. Jabari Smith talks a lot. He does. Holmgren talks a lot, but he's kind of like going a little bit. Paolo's quiet, but wake him up. Keegan Murray's not saying anything to anyone. Johnny Davis can get into it a little bit. Shaedon Sharpe, I don't think, talks very much. I don't think Sohan. So you're probably, well, what about Jaden Ivey? Ugh. I don't know the Jaden Ivey backstory, but all the reports are, I'd say Jabari or Chet, probably. But Chet's got to go to get there. But when the monster wakes up, that's the one.
I think it's probably Chet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's
The stories on Jabari Smith Jr. too, and Bruce Pearl will say this in interviews, like, yeah, I'm not trying to rip off anyone's work. Whoever wrote this article, I'm sorry. I don't remember the specific person. But it's like he's a different player on and off the court. Off the court, he's like this really nice kid. He's personable. He's going to Auburn softball games. On the court, he's like a serial killer. Like he's talking. He wants to murder people. He's doing it. Maybe he's Dexter. That's who Jabari Smith Jr. is.
Speaking of Dexter, TV shows, movies, what have you watched recently?
So I did a lot of work on the plane. I didn't watch a lot of TV shows, but I did have my flight to Vegas. I had like a little window of time, a couple hours. So I watched Jackass 4.5, which was a mistake because you're on a plane and people are on top of you. I'm a big human being. So I'm here and someone's right here. And like the third thing was like they put like a firecracker in their like rear and they're like lighting on fire. People are like, what are you watching? Like, is this some type of weird like home video? So I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't watch it with like strangers peering over your shoulder. I caught up a little bit on Stranger Things. I'm still behind there, trying my best, but also watching draft film at 11 o'clock at night and then trying to watch one episode with my half an eye open.
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't watched really anything.
Shocking.
I've just been so locked and loaded.
That draft has turned your life upside down, into the upside down.
Yeah, And I have to file it by Sunday. So, like, it's about to end.
So it's crunch
time. But, like, yeah, it's down to crunch time. But, yeah, no. I would say I haven't really watched anything, which is a huge bummer for me.
Very surprised.
You have Jurassic Park Dominion coming out, or Jurassic World Dominion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's, okay. I was texting with a friend of mine in the media who is a very good texter and very good at communication. He said, I'm at Jurassic World right now. It's about life balance, and I love him. I'm going to try to go see it Sunday or Monday. I get back very late Sunday, so I'm hoping Monday that'll be my 2 hours of like recovery will be a workout, and then Jurassic World, Jurassic Park Dominion. I don't care. The reviews stink. People are saying out there like I care. Number one was one of my favorite movies ever. It was so different. As long as the dinosaurs are running around, Chris Pratt is Chris Pratting. I'm good, man. Like, I'm not worried about like the script not being up to par. I'm here for one last ride, and if we're honest, they'll make 12 more of these 20 years from now. But for right now, like, I'm very excited. You can't take me off this like happiness cloud that I'm on. But I get to go and watch Dino DNA in the theaters one more time.
Yeah, like, so this is one of my weird things. Like, I don't have that connection with Jurassic Park. Like, it's good. Like, but it's never been like one of my things. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you have your things. Like, hilarious. Like, I'm trying to think. Like, I watched A Knight's Tale. Like, I would say that, like,
you take a Knight's Tale over Jurassic World.
Objectively, oh, no. Jurassic Park is a better movie than A Knight's Tale. But, like, I'd imagine that part of it for you is that. Like, you watched Jurassic Park probably 12 times when you were 8 years old, right?
Or if you're channel surfing, there's certain scenes where it's like, all right, I'm locked in for 15 minutes. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. Like, I probably watched A Knight's Tale 40 times when I was, not 40, maybe like 8 or 10 times, when I was like between the ages of like 10 and 13, right?
Yeah. Right.
So, like, it's like that thing where you have that weird connection with a movie that you grow up with, right? I never quite had that with Jurassic Park. Like, I saw Jurassic Park and I was like, oh yeah, this is great. Like, this is fun. Mm-hmm. Cool. I was just like probably 2 or 3 years too young
at the time. I was like collecting like the cups at McDonald's, like the collectible cups they had. I was in. Yeah. I'm still in. I'm still weighing in. And the same was with Batman. It's probably like the same time, like Batman Returns. That was my elementary days, if you will.
Yeah, like I have a bigger connection with like those movies than I do with Jurassic Park, for sure. Mm. I'm trying to think of like the actual big movies of like the 90s, like that I have a connection with. Randomly, like 10 Things I Hate About You. I've seen that movie like a crazy amount of times.
Yeah. Tammy the Shrew, right?
Yeah. But I think that what I'm learning is like the movies that I've seen a million times are more like early 2000s movies than like 1990s movies. Because like that's when I turned like 10.
Oh, shit. So like how many times have you seen Old School?
Oh, hundreds. Yeah. Old School is definitely
that's the sweet spot. Sure. That was, three, I think, right?
Yeah, and Wedding Crashers is another one. Like, I've just seen Wedding Crashers so many times.
Five?
I think it's a four or five.
Yeah, right in that sweet spot. Those two were ridiculous.
That's just, in the pocket.
So. Great theater movies, too. Like, laughing with uncontrollably the whole theater.
Okay, here's a good question. What is the movie you laughed at most in the movie theater?
It might be Old
when
School.
When you saw it.
It might be Old School.
Old School?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you probably saw that. Right when it came out.
I think consistently though was Tommy Boy for like a long time. Tommy Boy and Billy Madison were my two, like, you're homesick from school. That was like the rotation.
Yeah, underrated. Tommy Boy, there's a chance I've seen Tommy Boy more than any other movie in my life.
It's close for me as well.
Yeah. I think the movie I've laughed most at in my life when I saw it for the first time in a movie theater was Borat.
You see that
for the first time and you are just like crying laughing. It doesn't really hold up, I don't think, on repeat viewings, but the first time you're just like, what is this?
Well, yes. What is this when they're running through the hotel naked? I'm like, I can't, this is ridiculous. There's also an outtake. I think it's an outtake where Borat's in the store asking, what cheese is this? He's like, in this, And the guy's like, that's cheese. He's like, is this cheese? And he does it for like 50 cheeses just to show like how ridiculous America is by having like 50 different types of cheese. I watched it over my buddy's house and I was crying and laughing because it was just another world and a look into Borat. Yeah. I think Step Brothers, I laughed till I cried in the movie theaters too.
Yeah. The other one for me that stands out is The Hangover. For sure.
Yeah, yeah. I do remember seeing that too. The roll in the credits. I'm like, oh, here we go again. There's some unbelievable scenes and moments we can't depict or talk about on this program, but that's up there as well.
The things we can talk about on this program are that go subscribe to the YouTube channel, please. We're coming up to it, man. It's exciting. The draft is coming. The off season's coming. We've got a lot of really great stuff coming up. We have a cool announcement coming soon. We're going to probably announce it next week once things get moving a little bit more, but super pumped about it. Just go subscribe to the YouTube channel. There's going to be videos. There's going to be all sorts of really cool stuff going up there. Subscribe to the podcast, like leave us a rating and review. It's that time of year. It's so fantastic. You guys are the best fan base in the world. Like, we're super pumped to have everyone here and to have everyone listening to the show right now. And Penny, tell the people where they can find you.
Find me in a random gym in Florida, in Las Vegas, in Boston. I don't know. And also on Twitter, @Matt_Penny. And tagged on a lot of Sam's tweets and videos and hidden on his YouTube channel as well.
Yeah. I will have the draft guide at some point. There are probably stories that will come out before the draft guide comes out. I think our plan is like the Monday of draft week for the draft guide. For the love of God, do not hold me to that, people. but that is the current plan. That's all I've got. Until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.